Hi, it's Tony Bruschi from the Dark Side of Wikipedia. If you like this show and you also like the paranormal, then be sure to check out my other podcast, The Grave Talks, with new episodes every single Monday and Tuesday. Just search The Grave Talks wherever you download podcasts. Here's a 15-minute preview of a recent episode of The Grave Talks. Today on The Grave Talks, Being Watched, a conversation with Stephanie Smith. Haunted house can be a terrifying event for a child. It can be even more confusing if your parents, to protect you, refuse to discuss the haunting with you, only to have all your fears confirmed one day when your mother and you flee the house in fear of an unknown entity that demands you leave. That's what happened to Stephanie Smith. Today we hear her story of making sense of her childhood paranormal experiences and taking that knowledge into paranormal investigating as an adult.
I was actually 7 and definitely remember it like it was yesterday. My mom and I and her boyfriend at the time, we had moved to Grafton, North Dakota, small town, and we were looking at a house to rent. Immediately, I noticed that the landlady and her dog, she had a little poodle, would not go in this house to show us, you know, what the house looked like or anything. She just let us go in on our own. And I remember thinking as a child, that seemed odd to me. And, you know, we went ahead and obviously rented the place. My mom's boyfriend was a truck driver, so he, you know, had to leave right after we rented the place pretty much. So he didn't even get to sleep there yet. But the first night that we were there, I was in the upstairs hallway with my mom, which was right outside my bedroom door. And it was daytime, but I was like, Mom, there's somebody outside. That we had a little shed out there, and I could see a woman looking up at me from the inside of the shed. And I was, you know, Mom, look, you know, and she's like, there's nobody there. Of course, she didn't want to believe me. But finally, I was like, Mom, like, I drug her face. And I'm like, look out this window. Mm-hmm. And she was like, well, damn, there is somebody. You know, so we go out there and the shed door is wide open, but the padlock is actually still locked on the door. But there are 10 fingerprints and nose print on the window, but nobody's around. And of course, my mom's thinking, you know, somebody broke in. But over time, we were only there for, it had to be like 3 or 4 months total. But, you know, we had gotten a dog, which the dog was terrified of the entire area. He wouldn't come inside the house. And we did. We had to force him. And he just hunched over like he was terrified the whole time. And so obviously this dog was not happy with us. So we ended up, you know, giving her to somebody that would let her run a lot. And so I decided I wanted cats. Well, these cats used to run up and down the stairs just furiously. And then they would stop at the bottom of the step and like hunch over and hiss, you know, and all the fur is standing up on them. And then they would pass out for a moment. And we're like, something is definitely wrong here. But I kept hearing every single night this incessant knocking on the wall right by my head and complaining to my mom about it, obviously. And she's like, well, there's somebody, you know, hammering away on a roof or something in the alleyway across the street. But I kept looking outside and I'm like, there's nobody out there hammering on anything. Mm-hmm. And the knocking kept up, like it was wearing me down. And finally my mom's like, well, we're going to switch rooms. So, you know, it was only a 2-bedroom house. And so we switched bedrooms. I started sleeping fine in the other room, but she, however, was not. The dresser drawers were coming open all the time. There was one night in particular that I was asleep on the floor at the foot of the bed, and she woke me up saying, Stephanie, leave the blankets alone. Stephanie, don't touch the blankets. And I was like, Mom, I'm not touching the blankets. And at that moment, the blankets literally floated off of her, spun around just once, and then dropped back down. And so my mom's, you know, at this point, really, really super freaked out. The last night we were there, which stands out in my memory so clearly, it was a Sunday night. And, you know, they used to do the Sunday night family Disney movie on TV.
Yes.
And so that was religious for us. We always watched that. And I had my cat next to me, and my mom was hearing the door slam upstairs, and she goes to check it out. She said she went into what was now her room, couldn't find anybody. The bathroom door slammed. There's nobody. She went into my room because it's slammed and there's nobody. But then her door slammed again. So she opened it back. Whatever this thing was, slapped her across the face and then slammed the door. She came running down the stairs. She grabbed me by the arm. And I'm seven. So I'm more concerned with being my cat. But, you know, we packed a bag and we left. And that was the last time I ever stepped foot in that house. But I would ride my bike because I had friends, you know, in the neighborhood still. And I would ride my bike past it and just look, you know, look at the window. Like, is she looking at me? And I knew it was a female. Mm-hmm. But that followed me for years. I had nightmares for years thinking that this thing followed us from house to house to house. And, you know, thinking she was literally haunting us. And as I got older and began to, you know, realize, okay, this was a spirit. She was must have been angry about whatever happened, wanted attention, you know. And so, you know, learning a bit about more about the spirit world and things like that, then I became interested in it. And, you know, eventually we settled in Alaska for a while and I started doing just my own little ghost hunts at, you know, different places around Alaska and stuff. And of course, moving to New York, there's a plethora of spirits here. So mm-hmm. just kind of falls into your lap.
Yeah. I want to talk kind of more about the experience and understand it mm-hmm. even more. How long were you in the house?
In that house, it had to be about 3 or 4 months, not very long.
Okay. So these events were spread out about 3 or 4 months. It wasn't just a couple of days or anything like that.
Correct.
But things
yes.
continued to escalate. As things were escalating and you guys were having these experiences together, how is your mom handling it? How are you guys, you know, conversing about mm-hmm. what's happening?
Me being so little, she didn't want to talk to me about it at all. Mm-hmm. And she would just blow it off like it's something, you know, not paranormal or supernatural. But I knew better. I knew that this was something different. It felt different. And I do remember her actually going to a psychologist and getting an actual piece of paper saying, yes, these things are happening. And I am not crazy, because I know she was trying to speak to people about it. And people were like, you're nuts, you know, because yeah. obviously, you know, early 80s, you weren't talking about that stuff.
Sure.
You were totally crazy if you did.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. I mean, yeah, it wasn't something to be discussed. And if you were, you were an mm-hmm. unsolved mysteries and then shunned for the rest of your life.
It seemed, yes.
You know, that's how that worked. But so she's kind of doing what she thinks is best for you as a mom. And that's understandable. But mm-hmm. you're experiencing these things too. Are you pushing at her, trying to get recognition that you weren't in fact crazy as well? I mean, your mom's trying to battle that herself, but I would think you too are also almost feeling that in your own way.
I mean, I know I tried to talk to friends about it, and we were the new kids in town, and so we didn't know the history of the town or anything, and so people just kind of talk about that house and whatever it was that really happened there. I mean, we tried to have it blessed. There was a priest that came in to bless all the rooms. And I do remember him being in and out very quickly. And, you know, before he left the house, he said, I would not live here if I was you, and then leaves.
Wow.
And of course, you know, I'm so little, nobody's wanting to talk to me about this stuff. Nobody's wanting to explain things or anything. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sat there pretty much just with my own thoughts in my own head, wondering what's really going on, because I don't even think I knew about ghosts at that time.
So how are you processing all this at that age? Not necessarily how you look back on it, but the 7-year-old version of Stephanie when she's, you know, not able to talk to anybody about this, and you're not getting more information, you're not really sure what ghosts are, but you know these things are happening. What are you thinking at that moment?
I know that I had seen a shadow of this woman. We did find out later on that it was a woman. So I know I had seen her shadow around the house, but I thought it was just kind of annoying and rude. Like, you know, I'm trying to go to sleep because I've got school the next morning, and you're knocking on the wall by my head the entire night. So why aren't you letting me sleep, type of thing? You know, why are you disrupting? Why did you slap my mom? And I had, you know, all these questions going on for a long, long time that really didn't get answered. And for the most part, pretty much have gotten answered still. You know, why was she so angry with us or mm-hmm. angry at my mom or what have you?
I'm assuming your mom, did she discuss this with her boyfriend at the time, who was the truck driver who was kind of coming and going?
I think years later, she actually did talk to me about that. She tried telling him what was going on, but he didn't believe her.
Okay. How did it go at the point where you guys had to flee the house and literally you got a go bag and got out of there? Did you go back for more things? I mean, just to leave a house is not, you know, the easiest thing to do as an adult. We all can't be like, it's haunted. Sorry, we're not paying rent anymore. You know, that's not usually how it goes. So how did that logistically work out?
Her boyfriend had a sister who lived a little further in the country. And so, you know, that night that we left, you know, she obviously let us stay with her for a while. And, you know, I brought one of my, you know, my cat that I had and stuff. And so, I didn't ever get a chance to go back to the house and kind of make peace with things or anything. I know she obviously had to go back and get things, but I don't know, you know, if she did it while I was at school so that I wasn't around or whatnot. This is probably what happened.
So you said that after you got out of the house, you felt like it, or you were concerned that it was going to be following you. And before actually I get to that, let's talk about the demeanor of this thing. It seemed to be angry. It seemed to be kind of menacing. The priest says, I wouldn't live in this house if I were you. Mm-hmm. All these years looking at it back in retrospect, is this something, and it's just your opinion, is this something that you think was kind of a human spirit that was just really pissy and didn't like people, or was it something darker than that?
No, I think that it was the history of the house. There was a woman there and she was actually murdered by her husband. He thought she was cheating on him. And this was like probably back in the early 1800s or something. But so he murdered her in the bathroom there.
Oh, wow.
And so that's who I actually do believe was there, because I remember seeing a woman's silhouette. So I think she was just, she's angry. She probably never got justice. She wanted somebody to pay attention to her, but, you know, we didn't understand, at least I know I didn't understand what was going on or what the significance was. And so I think she probably pinpointed my mother more than anybody else. And my mom just didn't know what to do with it. So, you know, she couldn't handle it at that time. Nowadays, of course, you know, if she ever went back, she definitely could, but back then, no.
How did you uncover that story of that house? Because so many people, they wonder forever.
Yeah, my mom did a lot of archival research, like in the libraries and stuff there, and found, you know, the article with the house and the woman's death, you know, and her husband obviously getting away with murder.
Yeah.
So.
And is that what happened? Essentially, the woman dies and he gets away with it. I mean, how do you, what are you aware of as far as how that story goes? I mean, it was a different place in time where sick people could do things like that realistically. And it's not that hard, which is crazy to think of, but it happened.
I didn't see the newspaper article myself. This was just, you know, my mom telling me, obviously, years later of, you know, the evidence that she found. But, you know, just that. She had, like I said, she may or may not have been cheating on her husband, and he believes she did. But I do know he, somewhere in the article, it said something about her getting, or him getting a settlement afterwards. So I don't know if they had, you know, a dowry or life insurance type of thing back then. I have no idea, but something happened that after her death, he was able to come into some money.
Hope you enjoyed this 15-minute preview of one of this week's two brand new episodes of The Grave Talks. To hear the rest and get new episodes every Monday and Tuesday right in your podcast feed, search The Grave Talks wherever you download podcasts and press subscribe or visit thegravetalks.com.